Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a podcast brought to you by GoFundMe. In each episode, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives or has had their life changed by someone kind. And on today's episode, you'll get to hear both sides of that exchange. When Zavian Johnson was just 19 years old, the unthinkable happened. He was wrongfully convicted of a crime and was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison. Luckily, Zavian's case was picked up by the Northern California Innocence Project, and with the help of an incredible legal team, had his conviction overturned and is now a free man. Today, you'll hear from Kari Tillery and Paige Kaneb, who were instrumental in bringing about Zavian's exoneration. And you'll be hearing from Zavian himself. Thank you for tuning in to this very special episode of our podcast. We're very honored to be bringing you this story. Today, I'm joined by a truly remarkable group of people, Paige Kaneb, Kari Tillery, and Zavian Johnson. Thank you all so much for being here today and chatting with me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I am very excited to be speaking with you all today and very honored to share your story with our listeners. For those of you who don't know, Zavian Johnson was recently exonerated for a crime he was wrongfully convicted of over 15 years ago, thanks to the incredible hard work of the Northern California Innocence Project. He's now out of prison and starting a new phase of his life, and we on the GoFundMe team could not be more thrilled for him. Zavian, it is such an honor to meet you. Would you be able to start by telling us a little bit about your story?
I was wrongly convicted of a crime I did not commit, and I spent 16 years and 4 days in prison for that.
I can't imagine how hard that must have been. I seem to remember reading, though, that you accomplished quite a bit during your time in prison.
Yeah, I did. I got my GED, I got baptized inside, I got laudatory chronos, I believe they're called.
I think in like real world language, it's like certificates and
certificates. Yeah, I got
good work history.
Yes, good work history. I worked for all my time on inside, for I could say at least maybe 8 years of that time on inside. I worked.
He reads a ton of books.
He read it. Yes.
Oh wow.
I read a lot. I mean, it's kind of hard just to sum it all up, but
yeah.
I mean, I did a lot of soul searching. I did a lot of stuff to build from the inside out. So, you know, prayer, faith, meditation, you know, just whatever it is you could think of. You know?
That's really cool. Yeah. So while you were in prison, actually, I think I read, didn't you file something like 5 habeas corpus petitions? What would that be in real world language?
It's like a request for the court to go free.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I studied a lot and I put in numerous.
I think
petitions.
It was a lot more than 5.
Really?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
How did those go?
They all got denied. Just a single page blanket denial. A lot of times they didn't even give me an explanation. Just denied.
So oh my gosh.
Went through that for about a lot of years.
Wow. Yeah. So, Paige and Kari, how did Zavian's case end up coming to the NCIP in the first place?
I think Paige should start with that question.
The NCIP?
The Northern California Innocence Project, we're a nonprofit organization that looks into claims of innocence from people in prison, and we investigate them. And if we can find new evidence of innocence, then we litigate and try and get them out of court. Or get them out of prison, sorry. Get them into court and out of prison. Zav's case came to us because he wrote as saying that he was innocent and asking for help. He wrote from really early, like before he'd had his appeal, which time we don't take cases because you get an appellate attorney from the state. But after his appeal was denied, he wrote to us again. And a couple years later, his case made it to my desk and I went to meet him and what I think is really hard to convey is how much Zav, he went to prison, to maximum security prison at 18 years old, but even while growing up basically and turning into an adult in prison for a crime he didn't commit, became this really, remained this really gentle, kind, thoughtful person. And so going to meet him and getting to know him was really one of the things that drove, I think, both Kari and I to work really hard on his case.
That's so awesome. So in general, how does the NCIP choose which cases to take on? Was there anything about
Savion's case that particularly compelled either of you personally to want to work on it?
How we take cases is kind of a long triage process of figuring out, like, is there a claim of innocence? Is there new evidence to prove that innocence? But specific to Zav's case, there was science that we already knew was bad. And then when we looked closer and all of the witnesses said he was this great, loving, kind father who would never do anything like this. And so it really all just came down to his conviction was based on bad science. That made it pretty easy call to go forward.
Wow. So how did you come into this story, Kari?
So I work at a private law firm, and we for years have done innocence cases pro bono with the Innocence Project. And so I'd had some experience working on these cases. I'd worked on a case with Paige a few years earlier that didn't ultimately result in exoneration. And I was disappointed that we weren't able to achieve a positive outcome for our client in that case. And I was really motivated to kind of continue to do the work. And Paige came to me at some point and said, you know, we have this this case involving bad science around shaken baby syndrome. And I knew that she was very passionate about that that issue and had done a ton of research. And we talked about it previously. And it sounded like a really interesting case. And I decided it was well worth my time to do it. And that was only confirmed the first time I met Zav. And I don't know if it's the first time we met, but I remember him, you know, talking to me about, you know, the five love languages and so all of these sort of different aspects of philosophy and thought around kind of human interaction. And it was just, I said, this, you know, this is someone who not only is innocent, but should be out and can thrive on the outside and has used his time in prison so profitably, despite the concept of being wrongfully convicted and in jail for something you didn't do, but yeah. Just nonetheless not let sort of bitterness and anger consume you and to use that time effectively and with faith that you'll get out.
That is incredibly powerful. Savion, do you remember when you first heard that the NCIP was taking on your case and what did it feel like to get that news?
It was, let's see, I believe it was like 2012, I think, when I reached out to him again, I think. And then I got news in like 2013, a letter. And then I met Paige in 2014. So just hearing that even somebody, you know, cared enough or, you know, wanted to, you know, just help me, it gave me a sense of, you know, vindication. You know, it brought a sense of light to me, you know, lifted a weight off my back. I dealt with a lot, seen a lot, and I don't know, just having that hope that maybe all this could be over with, you know. 2014 was a good year.
That's amazing. Yep. Mm-hmm. So how do these cases go? Like, how long do they typically last? Or did you know how long this would last?
I mean, they really range. Like, I think the average time someone spends wrongfully incarcerated is like 15 years before really? They get out. 3 years from, like, start to finish is pretty... is like relatively fast in the post-conviction world, as terrible as that is. So I think I had like some idea that in 2014 that it would take at least at least 3 years. So I started in 2007, and like my first couple of cases, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get you out in no time. You know, you're gonna be home, and then you know you like ruin people's.
Oh no.
And then like it doesn't work out, and or it takes years. And so like I, by the time I met Zav, I was much more like, I don't want to get any false hopes up. You know, this process is really slow and it's really hard to get someone out of prison and I can't make any promises. So I, you know, I tried not to get his hopes up too much. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because sometimes it feels really, really slow. I think like the process of working with the doctors felt really long. And like I told Zev I'd file before I went on maternity leave, and then I came back from maternity leave and still hadn't filed anything. So I'm sure for Zav that felt real, real slow at times. And then I don't know, when the Kecker team got on, things went like we did a lot in a quick period.
When was that?
That was the summer of 2016, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Paige had done an amazing job. Because I think one thing that's sort of underappreciated here is both sort of the complexity of the science, but also the difficulty in getting an expert who's testified as to one thing at trial to both understand and acknowledge that the science has changed and what they said then and no longer applies now. That is a difficult task. And, you know, Paige spent, I don't know, a year probably going back and forth with Dr. Reiber, who was a forensic pathologist who testified at Zavian's trial, very persuasively so. And, you know, he would have questions about something and she would send him a study and they'd go back and forth. And finally, he came to the conclusion, and to his credit, because it is a very difficult thing to do given the magnitude of the consequences we're talking about, to say, even though it wasn't my fault and I was basing my opinion on the science at the time, it is still very difficult to say I was wrong.
Sure.
And so, you know, Dr. Reiber, to his great credit, did that, but it took a long time to get him there, and he didn't do it lightly. And so by the time we got the case, he was, if not all the way there, 95% of the way there. And so we picked up the case in great shape, and we did spend a lot of time working on the petition, working with Dr. Reiber to really refine his report, and ultimately getting a declaration from another doctor who testified at trial, and so on. And we, you know, sort of helped build out the case, but the foundation was there when we took on the case. And that's really due to the great work of Paige and the folks at NCIP.
But I was like deeply steeped in the medicine, and my petition looked like a medical journal, and Kari rewrote it so that it read like a legal brief that was really much more compelling and understandable.
But I have to say, I mean, we were a great combination that way, because I learned the science well enough, but I certainly don't have the level of expertise that Paige has in shaken baby syndrome, and
which doesn't exist.
Which is not a real thing. But in some ways, that was good, right? Because I could sort of look at it from a legal perspective more, and think about from a layperson's perspective, that layperson being the judge or the DA, how do you make this compelling for someone who is not steeped in the science? Mm-hmm. And so I think that was one of the big things we were able to add to the process. And I have to say, I mean, we worked on this brief a lot. I mean, I spent many, many Sundays in the office working on this brief. And it's one of the, I mean, from my, I think it is the best piece of writing, and certainly the best result that I've had in my legal career. But I feel like we put together something that is a model for other cases that people can use and take, and really, I hope that it is something that is used to exonerate the many other people who have been wrongfully convicted based on bad science. And so it was really, in that way, you know, sort of an amazing experience. But ultimately, I think, as you know, the DA conceded the petition. They didn't fight it. They agreed that the conviction was bad and that Zav should be freed. And ultimately, they decided not to retry him. And so, you know, not only in addition to being sort of proud of the work, obviously the result was more than we could have hoped for. And one of the reasons the case didn't take as long as I think we thought it would is that we didn't have to fight it on the merits.
Right. That is so incredible. Actually, I would love to pose this question to all three of you. What did it feel like when you found out that you won? Do you want to start?
Zev, you should start, yeah.
Sure, start with me.
Wow. It's sort of the biggest deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What did it feel like?
I mean, yeah. I was excited.
it's inexpressible. Just better than your first Christmas.
That's a great way to express it.
You know, going from, you know, death to life. It's I don't know how to put it in words, but I'm happy. That's what I can say. That's what I can, and I could continue to put out there, and I could continue to, you know, strive and just go about my business and try to make a something. I don't know, but the sky's the limit. So yeah, I was happy. So yeah,
I'm so happy for you, and I'm sure there are tons of other people who would say the same. What about you?
it felt great. I mean, there's like always this part that we talked about of like in a fair world, we would 100% win this like every time, you know, but you can't always count on that being true. So it was, I think for me, mostly relieving. And then when Zav walked out, that was sort of the most exciting. Like that's when it became really real.
Wow.
So I was the first one to find out that the DA had conceded the petition. Oh, yeah. Because they sent an email. And I think, and for whatever reason, they never reply all to the emails I send them. They only send them to me. And so I was the main person communicating with the DA. And so it was like 4:30 on a random Tuesday or something. And I'm sitting there working at my desk and an email pops up from the district attorney's office. And this guy, Morgan, who we've been dealing with, who is the head of their justice integrity and training unit. And I started reading the email and, you know, he's like, yes, we are going to concede the petition. We agree, blah, blah, blah. And I just screamed in my office. I was like, yes. And I ran to another one of our colleagues, Sarah Solomon's office, and was like, the DA is conceding, you know, and we just hugged and it was just, you know, and I was... And the worst part of it, of course, is you can't immediately tell your client. You know this amazing.
You can't?
Well, there's, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a way to get a hold of them right away.
You can write a letter.
Right. I got it.
But we had a visit. It turns out the members of our team had a visit scheduled for like the next day or a couple days later.
Oh, cool.
Which I desperately wanted to go to, but I was not on the list and I hadn't signed up. But and they got to deliver the news. But yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And then it was tempered by the DA's, the DA saying they hadn't decided yet whether they were going to retry him. Oh. And so then we had this sort of hanging over our heads. And it, you know, that sort of felt like a bit of a guillotine, you know, like this may all be taken away. But one thing we knew was this conviction was going to be overturned. And I felt very confident that if they retried this case, there was no way that they could prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And so I felt quite confident in that, but then, you know,
it'd be nice not to have to.
Right. So, you know, you find this news out, then it's a month before he's actually, we have a hearing and he's actually released. And that's like December 8th.
That was so ridiculous. The like judges, the research attorney who the paperwork had gone to had like gone on vacation. And so they were like waiting for something from us that we'd already filed. And
that's frustrating. Yeah.
But that day, I'll never forget that day, December 8th, you know, going to court. We knew it was going to happen because they'd conceded and it was great for the judge to reverse the conviction. But that night, when Zav walked out of prison, a free man in these ridiculous paper pants that they give you at county jail.
Paper pants?
I mean, literally, they're orange pants that are made out of paper.
Oh my gosh.
And you can see them on the GoFundMe page. Yeah. It's one of the pictures.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
And they're like
I didn't know they were paper.
They're like huge. I think
Biggie Smalls could have fit those.
They're big and it, you know, and he walked out the door and the door has this like exit only thing on. It was just this profound moment. I think overwhelming for all of us. I'm certain for Zav more than anyone, but it was... It was sort of a fairy tale conclusion to this, even though it wasn't actually the conclusion because they hadn't decided whether they're going to retry him. But it was a pretty amazing moment and one that I'll never forget.
That's so incredible. Yeah, I think I saw photos from that day as well as a recent photo of when you guys had found out and you got the news and everything. And I can just sense the closeness between all of you and it's just truly beautiful. So, Kari, you didn't only represent Zavion in court as his pro bono attorney, but you also launched a GoFundMe campaign to help get him back on his feet after he was exonerated. Firstly, can we just stop and appreciate that for a second? Because that is truly going above and beyond the call, I think. And I'm not sure something that most people would think to do or spend their time doing for someone. So what made you want to do that for him?
So, I mean, my name is on it because someone has to actually sign in, but this was a group effort and everyone sort of helped put together the content for the GoFundMe and commented on it and gave edits. And so I think making it made it really compelling. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, it was an easy decision. And I just, like, Zab's a really special person, and he's a friend, and you have clients sometimes that, you know, you represent them and the case is over, you kind of go your separate ways. That never felt like that here. You know, I knew, you know, he's getting out. He spent essentially his entire adult life in prison. Because of the nature of the compensation statutes in California, it was unlikely that he would get compensated, although there's an active effort to change the law right now that NCIP is involved in, and hopefully that will change.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, you come out with nothing. And I wanted to try to help Zab as much as I could get back on his feet and help, you know, help him establish his life. And part of that is, you know, you need a place to live, which one of our team members Zav has been staying with her, and she's been amazingly generous. And she's in trial, right? I wish she could be here. But she's been incredible, Rhonda Andrew. But, you know, you need money too.
Absolutely.
You need clothes and a cell phone and, eventually a car and so on and so forth. And so it just seemed like a no-brainer. And also, Zav is my friend, you know, and we spend a lot of time together. He hangs out with all of us a lot. And I want to see him be successful. And so I happen to know a lot of well-to-do lawyers. So I felt like it's also, I had the potential to raise money because I know a bunch of rich lawyers. So that helped too.
So actually, just to go back for one second. Sure. I think most people think that if you're wrongfully convicted of a crime and exonerated, you get some sort of compensation, but I believe that is not the case. Do you know about how many people do get something?
Paige would know these statistics better than I, but the problem is that the fact that you're exonerated, you were tried and convicted in a way that was inconsistent with the law, is not enough to get compensated. You have to, in California, you have to prove actual innocence.
Oh, wow.
Which is, if you have a DNA case or an eyewitness case where someone says that, you know, very clearly that wasn't the guy, it was this guy, you know, then the opportunity for compensation can be realized and not even in those cases always. But when you have a case like this where it's based on expert testimony and people say, you know, the expert testimony is the injuries are equally consistent with a fall versus shaking. Like, the nature of the case doesn't allow for proof of actual innocence, although Zavion is actually innocent.
Gotcha.
But Paige can talk about the statistics, I think, in more detail.
So, yeah, it does actually, state by state, it's different. Some states there isn't compensation at all. California does have compensation, as Kari was saying, though. Right now, you have to prove that you didn't commit. You have to prove a negative, which, as we know, is generally impossible. And so, like, our whole system, criminal justice system, is generally built on the state has to prove guilt, and absent that, you're presumed innocent. But we don't do that in compensation right now. So that is one of the things we're trying to change. Of the people who are on the National Registry of Exonerations for California exonerees, I think there's like 180-something, and I think there's like less than 20 of them have been compensated.
Wow.
So it's a really small percentage in California of
That's incredible.
People who've gotten compensation.
Wow. So back to the campaign. Your campaign is right now only about 6 weeks old, I think, but it has already raised over $25,000, which is amazing. 180 donors. Both of you, actually, I'd love to know how it felt seeing all those people come together to support you. Zavion, would you like to start?
It's kind of been a roller coaster, you know, ever since meeting Paige, and just from there, you know, everybody that comes on board, you know, is nothing but just positivity and love. And so with the campaign, when it started, I mean, I never met none of these people except for, of course, who you see on there that I know, but majority of those people I never even met. So just for them to just come out of the woodworks and just care like that. I'm still in awe by it. So, you know, I'm not a man of many words, but I do want to say thank you. And I appreciate every single one that donated, and it's helping. And also it's that started a conversation because, other people has been coming out of the woodworks too, and just, you know, job opportunities, and someone donated a car to me.
Wow.
So it's, like I say, that was like Pandora's box.
The thing that surprised me the most was the number of donors and the kind of just the range of donations. There were definitely a handful of people that made big donations, but just even with those large donations, most of the donations were relatively small donations from a wide range of people, particularly after the GoFundMe blog post came out. I mean, just had people from all over the country making these small donations. I remember, you know, one of the reporters who did a story on Zab gave a donation. I mean, it was just this incredible outpouring. And so the fact that it was 180 people was the most satisfying piece of it. Obviously, you want to raise as much money as possible, but I think telling the story is important. And there's a sense of community when you have a lot of donors.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that I find so powerful about our platform is, you know, you can hone in on a specific campaign like this and kind of look at a map, or just, it's like a big web of support, you know, and sometimes all around the country and sometimes the world. And it's just, it reminds me that everyone's a little more connected than we think sometimes. So, Paige and Kari, why are you both so passionate about the work that you do in this space?
I went to volunteer at NCIP right out of law school. I had taken a wrongful convictions class and was an exoneree, came and spoke. Rick Walker, actually, who Zav now knows, and also one of the founders of our project. And I didn't have a job, was really. So I volunteered while I was, the idea was while waiting for bar results. And then after I passed the bar, I got a fellowship. And by then, I was pretty attached to both the work and my clients. Like, I think there's a real luxury in only working on cases you 100% believe in. And then also, I have met all of these great people who, like Zav, and the family of exonerees that he's now becoming a part of. Yeah, I mean, getting to fight for what I like 100% believe is right and for someone who deserves it is like a really magical combination.
So I have always had a fairly robust pro bono practice as part of my work and my firm, Kecker Van Aston Peters. We really are, the firm is also really committed to pro bono work. We commit to doing at least 5% of our hours, billable hours, are dedicated to pro bono. That's our goal. We almost always exceed it. Like this last year, I think we did 8 or 9% pro bono, including some of the work that Cody Harris, one of my partners, did in the Sanctuary Cities case. But I had worked a little bit on John Tennyson's case in the early, like sort of in 2004, 2005. And I enjoyed that. And then, you know, last 5 years, I've worked on a few cases with NCIP. As I said, one that was, we weren't able to achieve the result we'd hoped for. But I sort of became very passionate about the work and walking that path of justice. And when Paige invited me to work on other cases, we've worked on two cases since, you know, it was easy to say yes. And one, I mean, I think from my perspective, one of the, I've learned a lot about myself and experience these such amazing things. Obviously, the exoneration is one of them, but another is just learning how to open yourself up to people in prison, even if you might not be able to help them. Like this was, I always felt very reserved, and it was difficult for me to like really disengage in sort of conversation and get to know people because I was so concerned that it would feel too terrible if I couldn't help them. And having gone through that, I don't, you know, I having seen how open Paige is with her clients and how they respond to her and how it makes such a difference in the relationship and actually getting the results. You know, it's I've learned a lot about that, and it's okay to open yourself up even if you can't ultimately help somebody. I mean, that is beyond your control at the end of the day. But what you can control is how you interact with people and really treating them like full human beings and telling them about your life and learning about their life and really getting to know them on a personal level. And then the other piece that's been incredibly profound for me is getting to know the community of exonerees. I mean, it is, you have people from extraordinarily different walks of life, life experiences, backgrounds, but they've all gone through this horrific experience, and that bonds them in a way that is so incredible. And so just to get to hang out with them together and see the relationships, like, they just took Zav into this community, and the love there, and the, like, it's more than just the legal work. You know, as much as I think I'm happy that I was able to help Zav and, like, sort of change the course of his life, like, he's changed the course of my life and changed, I mean, and affected me, working on these cases affected me in such a profound way. It's like, I feel like I've given him as much as he's given me.
That's so beautiful. Paige, if there was one thing you would most like listeners to come away understanding about wrongful convictions and the work in that space, what would it be? Because I think you're so in the weeds with the work that you do. You know so much about it. But a lot of people, I think they would be surprised to know there's not some sort of compensation, or, you know, think that it would happen quicker for most people. What would you like people to come away knowing?
I definitely thought when I started this work that once you found the evidence of innocence, like, the doors would just open, everybody would agree, and also that it would be a happy ending. The person would walk out and, like, go live a great life. I'm from Canada, where we have a much better social safety net. So, for instance, when my first exoneration I was a part of, Maurice Caldwell, when he walked out of prison, he had a couch to sleep on, which was sort of like good fortune that he even had that, because most of his family had passed away. He couldn't get on Social Security. There's, like, no welfare. There's no health care. Like, it was really kind of a flabbergasting thing for me that there was nothing set up, and there were no programs for him. That the thing about wrongful convictions is it's not a huge population, and so there aren't systems set up the way there are, for instance, if you are guilty of a crime. When you get out, there's a lot of things set up to help you reintegrate. So the most flabbergasting parts of this have been how hard it is to actually get someone out of prison, how long it takes, how often there is a big fight. Sometimes even fights over things like DNA testing. Like, we want to DNA test the gun used in a shooting. Wow. And the DA will fight us on that. So it's like not even – it's we have to fight before even getting to the answer, getting the physical evidence in Zav's case. They said no to me for like 2 years until the coroner changed, and then I pretended I'd never asked before and tried again, and then we got it. So, you know, there's just – so I didn't realize that all of those roadblocks were there or how long it would take, and I also didn't – I didn't really realize that getting out of prison isn't an ending. It's like another beginning, right? And so the like, what Kari has done with this GoFundMe, and what Kecker, like, his law firm has been super generous. You know, Zav's staying with someone. He's got a car now. There's, like, a decent amount of money. Like, Zav will be able to live for months and try and get some of that reintegration happening. And but that's not what happens for everyone, I guess. And that's it's a sad part of this work.
Yeah. For anyone listening who really wants to make an impact in the world or in someone's life but kind of doesn't know where to start or is nervous a little bit to take that first step, what would you say to them?
I guess I would say sort of just do it. Don't be inside your own head so much. Trying to do good is good. You know, it's a good thing. And even if you don't get to where you want to go, no one's going to fault you for trying to do good. Don't worry so much about failure. You know, it's if you fail, then you failed trying to do something kind for somebody. And at the end of the day, if we were all a little kinder to one another and a little more generous, this world would be a much better place. And so I firmly believe that. And I think that sort of is what guides my life generally, but also in terms of wanting to help people, is that I want to do good and I want to be kind.
Absolutely. Zavion, I think we would all love to know what's next for you. What are you most excited about when you think about the future?
Yes. Well, that is the $1 million question. What is next? I'm trying to figure it out every day, but I do know that I want a career. I do know I want a family. I do know I want life to be abundantly, you know. I don't want to say I want to chase what I lost, but I do want to, you know, have that that beginning again. So the sky's really the limit.
I barely have words to describe the experience of meeting with Kari, Paige, and Zavion today. I think I can speak for many people when I say that I can't even begin to imagine what Zavion has gone through in the past 15 years of his life. We were all so thrilled to hear about his new chance at life, and the fact that GoFundMe could play some small part in helping him rebuild is just too humbling to explain. You can donate to Kari's campaign for Zavion at GoFundMe.com/ZavionJohnson. That's GoFundMe.com/ZavionJohnson. And you can learn more about the Northern California Innocence Project at law.scu.edu/NCIP. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a podcast brought to you by GoFundMe. For more information on this episode, head over to GoFundMe.com/podcast. If you've been inspired by any of the stories you've heard here, please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@GoFundMe.com. Lastly, for more True Stories of Good People content, you can follow us on Instagram at True Stories of Good People and on Twitter at TSGP Pod. We'll be back next time with more True Stories of Good People. Talk to you then!